Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Now I can preach it like this, okay? Repent! Or I can tell you, change your mind. Preaching repentance in the area of consciousness of sins is dishonoring the work of Jesus.
Repentance means you realize you're guilty, that you deserve the wrath and punishment of God. You begin to realize that sin is in you, and you turn your back on it in every shape and form. You renounce the world, whatever the cost, and you deny yourself and take up the cross and go after Christ.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The voice that you are about to hear is clueless. This is, wait a second, that was my voice. This is Wretched Radio. Well, that would actually work too. In studio, the one, the only, the clueless one, Rick Thomas. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Todd. It's good to be here.
Why are you so clueless today, sir? You're a font of wisdom, and yet you're clueless. Why?
I was born that way. That's the way God made me.
Because you have no idea what's coming down the alley for you, do you?
I asked you if you would prep me on what we're going to be talking about today, and you said no.
How fun would that be? Really? How fun would that be?
No, it's great. It imitates a counseling session.
It's exactly. See, now look at that. We're on the same page. That's what I was thinking. Yes, people walk into your counseling office, and you get hit with things that I don't think most of us can imagine. Is that an exaggeration?
Well, yeah, everything and the kitchen sink, and you have no clue what they're going to say. We call it pneumatic ministry, walking in the Spirit. Jesus gives us the words to say at that time, and he helps us in those moments. What you don't want to do is you don't want to prescribe the night before what you're going to say to the counselee, because you don't know what the counselee is going to say to you. I think discipleship is what we're talking about here. It's more exciting than preaching. The preacher has it easy. No offense to all preachers.
Wow. What do you mean, no offense
no
to
offense
the preachers?
No offense to all preachers out there.
No, it's just, no, what do you
no,
see?
Wait a minute.
It's so easy doing that preaching.
Yes, it is. The preacher studies all week. He crafts a wonderful sermon. He exegetes, he prays, and then he gets up on Sunday, and he shares what he prepared. Discipleship is not like that. You're in the moment, walking pneumatically. You're having two conversations at the same time. You're talking to God. Lord, help me to understand this person that I'm talking to. And then you give them advice right from God's word. And that is exciting.
And that's what biblical counseling is.
That's what it is in a nutshell.
It is discipling. This is Rick Thomas of rickthomas.net. If you have never been introduced to his website, you gots to go. Use the search engine, type in whatever issue you are interested in, and I am telling you, what you will read is a game changer. I am not being hyperbolic, nor am I exaggerating. It will help you to reorient your brain to thinking rightly. All right, so here's what I've come up with. You tell me, Mr. Biblical Counseling, this is better than preaching. Rick Thomas.
No offense to all pastors out
there.
Too
late for that. This is kind of the way that I've been thinking through what God does with somebody who is saved. Because of the fall, noetic effect, our brains, we suffer the curse like everything else.
I've been told.
God saves us, and then he begins to reorient our brain in alignment with reality, which is defined by him. So here's my illustration. Please correct this if you think it needs help. What Steve Jobs is to Apple Computer, God is to us. Steve Jobs designed Apple, and there is a specific software that it requires to run rightly. And if you do not use the right software, things go kafritz.
Yeah, we call that a Microsoft or PC.
I don't know all this technical lingo. God designed us. His software is the Bible.
Correct.
When our brains are not in alignment with that, things go kafritz. How'd I do?
That's exactly right. The only normal
the only normal
person who's ever lived is Jesus Christ. And so he is the benchmark. Everybody else is abnormal. And so God regenerates us, and then we begin a process of being normal or becoming Christ-like.
You know, I'm going to steal that.
God's word is the roadmap or whatever the illustration
software.
The software. God's word is the software that helps us to become normal.
Yeah, I think most people heard that and went, wait a second, Jesus is the only normal person. No, he was like supernatural and divine, and of course we understand that. But he is the only one who thought rightly all the time. Nobody else thinks that. We don't even meet that part. Forget the supernatural. He's the only one who thinks right consistently and constantly.
Yeah, and the term you used was the noetic effect of sin, that it affects our minds, and we say that makes us abnormal.
All right, so that illustration that I wrote is for a booklet that I'm working on, and I don't think in this one I've plagiarized you much. Oh, believe me, I'm going to steal lots of your stuff. You know, when I can't remember what book I wrote, and so often I'm like, I think I got this from Rick Thomas, but I can't tell because you're so ingrained in my brain. I don't know where you end and I begin, which is...
Yeah, scary.
Could we just take a break right now? Because I think both of us could just use a breather from that thought. All right, so I'm working on a booklet to try to at least help people, not to fix people's issue of depression and suicidal ideations, but to encourage them, your brain needs some adjusting. It needs better thinking. It starts with salvation, and then it goes into sanctification.
Right.
So it's not a booklet that's intended to fix everybody's problem, but to start aiming them in the right direction. So in an effort to cheat, I mean, to receive your wisdom for that booklet, suicide, why do you think we are seeing so what appears to be so much more of it today than 20, 30 years ago?
Two things. One, we don't know. I mean, it is possible that we're seeing more of it. I would agree with that. But what the issue here is that the world's a lot smaller, and so we know more about people who are committing suicide, and so there's more documentation of it. But with that said, there is more suicide. And one of the reasons is because it's a popular thing among teenagers. I mean, it's a mimicking behavior that teenagers do. They hear it in school. This is what they do, is what other kids do. It starts with cutting, and it's almost a faddish type thing that people do. But and that's not the whole reason of why people are committing suicide, but then underneath that, it's just a lot of hopelessness. It's just another way of looking for answers, and suicide is the final answer in some people's minds. So it's popularized today. One of the reasons it's popularized is because of social media and what people are seeing either on the TV shows that promote suicide or what they see on other social media platforms.
Could you give me 13 reasons why what you just said is true?
I'm clueless.
You don't know what that show is? I thought that's precisely what you were referencing. There's a Netflix that show, 13
okay.
Reasons
well, okay.
Why.
Well, you need to... I have TV and movie amnesia.
Really?
I do. And so I don't remember TV shows and movies. But when you said that, yes, that TV show, right?
Do you think that maybe you should see yourself for your amnesia problem?
I consider it a gift from God.
Because it's so bad.
No, whenever I quote anything from movies, my family says, Dad made a movie quote because it's an anomaly. I can't remember.
Okay.
The upside is when I go get a movie from Redbox that I've seen.
Seen it for the first time.
Yeah, it's the first time I've seen it.
Get one DVD and repeat it.
But I do. When you said that, I remember the TV show.
Okay, but it the word that you chose was hopelessness.
Right.
I actually put that, that's chapter two in the book. The first thing, and I needed it foundationally, was confusion.
Right.
Meaning people don't understand how the world is operating.
Right.
And when you don't know what's going on, what's happening, what the point is, that can also lead to despair or hopelessness.
Yeah, the confusion leads to the hopelessness.
Right. All right. So that, you think, is ultimately the big issue for people who are suicidal?
Yeah, it's an answer, which is an answer for them, but it's not an answer. But the only answers that you can come from confusion to hopelessness is extreme measures that ultimately don't work. And when you get to I would say suicide is the farthest you can go with the self-esteem doctrine. The end of the road for self-esteem is suicide. It's a person who is so consumed with themselves, which is what self-esteem is. It's esteeming yourself. And if you go as far as you can go on that, you get into more and more hopelessness until there is no other answer but to take your life away, because you're so consumed with yourself that you just remove yourself.
Let me press back on that, because I suspect somebody's going, whoa, 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 suicide is the opposite of self-esteem. You're miserable. You feel like you're drowning, like somebody's holding your head underwater. This isn't about loving self. This is about loathing self. How would you respond?
Well, it's to loathe yourself is It's an individual who is looking down on this person that I hate. And this person that I hate is me. I am loathing this person here. You're still consumed with yourself. You hate the person that this person, you hate the individual that this person is. And so you eventually kill this person. That's a person who's consumed with themselves. If you take the opposite of what Paul said in Philippians 2, we esteem others more than ourselves. And so the gospel has an outward focus where we're loving God and loving others more. But the self-esteem doctrine turns you back on yourself. And if you spend your time looking at yourself all the time, you will feel hopeless and you will begin to hate this person here. And that's where the self-loathing is. So you could say it's like an out-of-body experience. I'm looking down on this person who is me, who I despise, and I don't have any way of getting out of this. Now, that's what being lost means, and that's what the hopelessness is. And so that self-esteem pushes you so far to you kill yourself.
All righty, then. That's going to require more unpacking, and we're going to do that with Rick Thomas, rickthomas.net. It will be moments well spent if you visit his website. Biblical counseling is his game. We are going to continue talking about suicide and a subject that you brought up, which I suspect is also a mystery to a lot of people, and yet so prevalent these days, the issue of cutting, with Rick Thomas of rickthomas.net. This is Wretched Radio.
Thank you for joining us today. We do always appreciate that you choose to spend part of your day with us here at Wretched Radio. Good on you. Yeah, you deserve a good on you for giving away mass quantities, copious amounts? No, mass quantities of our gospel booklet, What Time is Purple? It's a great booklet for someone persuaded by evolutionary theory, an agnostic, an atheist, anyone who doesn't really believe the Bible's true. And the best part is, you get your copies of What Time is Purple, and they're free. The booklets are free. You just cover the shipping and hand them out. It is just that simple, because honestly, we can really only handle simple around here. To get your copies of What Time is Purple, go to wretched.org/purple. Clever, aren't we? wretched.org/purple. Oh, and thanks very much to our gospel partners. They're the ones who make this kind of thing possible. Wretched. Amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Ultrasound machines save lives. Don't believe me? Then believe Dan Steiner of preborn.org.
A young woman come in, 18, with her boyfriend, and he's pushing her to abort, took him back into the ultrasound room. There's two hearts there. It's twins. The father looks at that, this 19-year-old guy. He goes, I don't know what we're going to do, but I know what we're not going to do. We're not going to kill those two babies.
Ultrasounds work. When a mommy, a daddy sees a picture of their baby in the womb, 80% of the time they choose life. It is $28 per ultrasound. May I ask, how many ultrasounds could you provide? $28 per month. Please note, whilst Preborn is busy trying to save the lives of babies, they're trying to save the souls of mommies and daddies by preaching the gospel. Please consider supporting Preborn at preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched.
Road Trip to Truth with our host John Fabares is Wretched's next TV series. 26 episodes that go right into the lion's den, secular university campuses. See, we want to reach this generation with this TV show aimed directly at millennials. And this program will also share the gospel with millions. Millions. It's only because of your support of Wretched that allows us to do what we do here every single day. So if you're already supporting Wretched, thank you very much. We are extremely grateful. If you're not supporting Wretched, would you prayerfully consider giving a tax-deductible gift to Wretched on, say, a monthly basis? Not only would you be helping us keep the lights on, but you'd help us reach this anxious, depressed, and lost generation with the gospel. Visit wretched.org/donate to become a Wretched Gospel Partner and join us on our road trip to truth. That's wretched.org/donate.
Important dates in Christian history. 1559. John Knox returns to Scotland to lead Reformation there after a period of exile in Calvin's Geneva. Knox founded the Presbyterian Church, which became a driving force in English politics and the American Revolution.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The latest trend appears to be, well, frankly, a mystery. This is Wretched Radio. The issue, cutting. The explanation, we need one because more and more young people are doing it to help us unpackage what so many people who are Gen Zs and millennials seem to be rather enamored by is using a sharp object to cut themselves. Rick Thomas of RickThomas.net. Visit his website. You'll be glad you did. RickThomas.net. We're talking about the issue of suicide. I want to get to cutting in a moment because you said cutting, it sounded like, tends to go along with
right.
people who are suicidal. Does everybody who commits suicide cut themselves?
No.
All right. Then why, besides hopelessness and self-loathing and self-love, all kind of mingled together, what else do you think are the main contributors to suicide?
One of the biggest is that it's a mimicking behavior is popularized within schools. And then you tie that to a devaluing of the human body. We see so much destruction of the human body. We see so much killing in our culture today that we don't value life, the abortion issue. We don't value life. And so we can pick and choose who we want to accept or not accept. So life is not valuable. It only stands to reason that we don't have a high value for us made in the image of God. And so if you don't have a high value for human life, and then this mimicking behavior that you see, it's a fetish type thing, and then you throw in these deep confusion, hopelessness, or dysfunction, these kids that just come out of dysfunctional families and they're just looking for answers. It's just one of many answers.
There's another aspect that I thought of while you were talking was, and this isn't necessarily even for people who are saved, but in our culture, there's no longer any threatenings of hell to make death something that should cause somebody to go, let me put the brakes on these thoughts. Right. This is not going to be a good thing for me if I end my life. So you've got a diminishing of any threatenings of the afterlife.
Right.
Plus an encouragement to do what appears to be what the cool kids do on TV. Parents who, if they're not divorced, they're maybe just not really living in the same home
right.
anymore, both pursuing careers and the kids right. are untethered. So right now we've got a cauldron for suicide. And ultimately, people believe that suicide is the fresh start that they've been needing. As a Christian, with all of these thoughts in mind, how do I then approach somebody who is thinking about ending their life?
I would want to befriend them. And what you'd have to do with the individual is you have to find the starting point of where this person is. And so every individual is at a different starting point. Every individual has different shaping influences in their lives. And so I'd want to find the starting point and begin to build a relationship with that person. Now, you're also working with inside information. So as believers, we have inside information on every human. We know what's wrong with them. We know what they want. We know what they don't want. And so you begin to speak to them in a way that resonates with them. For example, they don't want to suffer. They don't want to be in fear. And so you begin to speak with these things that are inside of them. And as you communicate the hope of the gospel to them in a practicalized, relevant way that they can understand, and again, that's where you find your starting point with the individual. And so as you understand them, you begin to communicate the gospel to them in practical ways that speaks to these fears or this suffering that they're going through. And then if they can get just a modicum of hope, then you can start moving them along on this continuum, hopefully to salvation or whatever it is that they need.
All right, this is where I think you might well be the best person in the country suited to that particular task of taking the theology of the gospel and applying it. You know, so often, Rick, we hear, hey, think about the gospel. How's about that gospel? That gospel's so amazing. And then
Yay.
Nobody talks about what that looks like in my suicidal heart. So if you would be so kind, show us how you take theology from the shelf and bring it into my dark thoughts.
Well, I mean, two illustrations of it is John 3, John 4. And so we have two hopeless individuals, Nicodemus and the woman at the well. Jesus is having a moment with them, but the construct that he develops to each one of them is radically different. And so it's really understanding your audience. You can't map Bible cliches or whatever Christianese on top of every individual, because nobody, you don't cookie cutter this stuff. And so when you look at John 3, John 4, you have a man, a Jewish man, a religious man, and that's how Jesus talked to him. Now, the interesting thing is that both of them had the exact same problem. They needed to be born again. But the conversation that Jesus had with Nicodemus was radically different from what he had with the woman at the well. So you turn the page in John 4, you have a half-breed woman, Samaritan woman, who had these relational problems, sleeping with multiple men, and that dialogue that Jesus had with her was different. And so it's imperative for us, when you meet someone, this is what I meant by finding the starting point. You have to begin understanding where this person is, how they're thinking, how they got to this place, shaping influences in their lives, and then you practicalize the gospel according to who this unique person is.
All right. So that's like biblical counseling starting. Well, there's studying, there's praying, but it's getting to know the person and understanding. But what I would like for you to try to do for me, and if you need me to play the role of the suicidal person, I'll do my best. I come into your office, I'm hopeless, I am bleak, and you say, well, the gospel can help you, and I say, show me.
Well, I would begin asking them questions. I would want to know, if you're suicidal, I mean, how'd you get this way? What's been your journey? You know, why are you at this point?
But let me, you do this all the time in your writing at rickthomas.net, where you'll take somebody that kind of an amalgamation of a lot of your folks that you work with, and you put them together and kind of like, here's our test case. So this is somebody who pretty typically, school is hard, parents are split, social media pressures, they feel like a loser at school, their future, they didn't get into the school, so everything is just looking really, really bleak. So my first issue is, my future is not so bright, I need to wear shades. So what would you then say to me, gospelly, to help me understand my future in a correct light?
Well, I would want to understand, what is it about your relationship with God that would make your future not bright? Because we have a bright future. And so I would talk about your relationship, your family dynamic, your family relationship. More than likely, one of the most common things that you will run into with an individual like this is they had a poor relationship with their father. And that relationship with their father, they map it over their relationship with God the Father. And as you begin to talk to them about God the Father, well, they don't want to trust Him, because the only father that they've ever had a relationship with is an abusive or even a passive father, which is a passive father, consequentially, is just as complicated on a child as an abusive, angry father. And so now you're introducing them to God the Father, and they don't want a relationship with Him. Therefore, they get to the place to where my future is just hopeless, because God is not an option for me. That's one of the issues that you will run into. And then typically, the response of that kind of person is to, rather than trusting God to create a bright future, they will go through self-reliant means. They'll become a self-sufficient person to carve out a life according to what they want, and that will fall flat. And so now they're in the office, their life has fallen flat. They won't follow God for reasons shaping influences of parents, as I was talking about, so they chose to do it their own way. Then that collapses on them. Now there's no future for them, and there's no reason for me to live. What I would want to do with this individual is help them to see that they have carved out a self-reliant way of living their lives, and the reason they did that is because they do not want to follow God, and the reason they do not want to follow God is because they had this horrific shaping influence as a child with a father.
And it could also be that they are simply being rebellious and they don't want to follow God and His precepts. Is that an option?
Well, that's what that is. They are rebellious. They are making a decision. I don't like mayonnaise.
Miracle Whip?
I don't.
Huh. What about a blend of mustard and mayonnaise?
No, sir. I'm a Christian.
I see.
If I keep putting mustard on my sandwich, and I don't ever put mayonnaise on my sandwich, you have to eventually ask the question, why am I not choosing mayonnaise? I always choose mustard. If this guy is always choosing a self-reliant path and is never choosing to trust God, he's in rebellion. I have to ask his question, what's your problem with mayonnaise? what is your problem with God? And so he has an issue with God, and that's why he is in rebellion. Now, I wouldn't necessarily tell him that he was in rebellion because that could come across harsh. But I already know, as you have just said, intuitively, you already know that he's in rebellion. So I would ask him questions to help him to tell me that he is in rebellion, where he figures
comes
this
to
out.
The conclusion.
He comes to the conclusion on his own rather than me telling him what his problem is. But yeah, the path that I just carved out as far as a self-sufficient worldview that falls flat because of this presupposition of a bad father, that is rebellion. But he's made that choice. Now, in his mind, it's like, I don't have any choice but to choose this. But actually, he is making a choice, and he doesn't like mayonnaise.
So the moral to the story is, start liking mayonnaise, and specifically Miracle Whip, because that's biblical. Was I tracking with you?
You were close.
Good. More lessons from Rick Thomas of rickthomas.net. We will get to the issue of cutting, because you just might be surprised who in your church or maybe even your home is doing that act. Next with Rick Thomas of rickthomas.net on Wretched Radio.
Books of the Bible. Mark was a follower of Christ, traveling companion of Paul, an associate of Peter. His gospel presents Jesus as the Son of God. Here, Jesus is the perfect example of self-sacrifice, the suffering servant who died as a ransom for our sins. When you suffer for obedience to Christ, do not be ashamed, for Christ suffered and died for our disobedience. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
A mystery unpacked. This is Wretched Radio. When you hear about somebody who cuts their own body, most likely it is a mystery to you, entirely perplexing. Why would somebody who loves themselves, and we all do, don't we, want to hurt themselves? To help us unpack the mystery from rickthomas.net is Rick Thomas himself. Please visit his website. You do have articles there on cutting, rickthomas.net. You've got articles on suicide, depression, anxiety, anger, bipolar, sexual issues, pretty much the whole deal. In my estimation, rickthomas.net, you will see, I think, the most practical application of theology to life. That is your sweet spot. I don't know if anybody's ever told you that, but I just did.
Well,
okay. Yeah, just say you're welcome.
Just say
you're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. RickThomas.net. You will benefit much from reading on whatever subject is of interest to you. Can't encourage it enough. Let's talk about cutting. People using a sharp object, a razor blade, I presume, to their arms, their legs, maybe to hide it, maybe to show it. What is going on in that heart?
They're hurting. Sometimes we talked about the mimicking behavior. They're just mimicking something. It's just a faddish solution to what everybody's looking for, how to feel better about themselves. Sometimes it's just a person that's wanting to feel something.
Yeah, they're
just numb.
That just makes my head kind of go, why? I don't understand. Feeling pain is better than feeling nothing?
Yes. Okay. They're feeling something.
Because they're just a flat emotional state?
Yeah, the Bible talks about today in Hebrews 3:7, Hebrews 4:7, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your heart. We can become so dull or so hardened by life, by choices that we make. There's a lot of reasons for it. That you just want to feel something. And sometimes cutting is an illogical solution.
But at least it's feeling something. Now, when somebody is hurting that much or that flat with their emotions, does the razor, it hurts, but it hurts. It's pain, correct?
It does hurt. And they can start small and then they can continue to do it.
All right, but it's not like somehow the wiring is such that it's like, ooh, that's just delightful. It actually hurts, but that option is better than nothing at all.
Yeah, and part of it is that. Part of it also can be self-atonement. They don't have any way of paying for their sins. Mm. And so this is a penance for some people that I don't know how to get out of, you know, the guilt that I feel, whether that guilt is legitimate or is imposed upon them by someone else, that they don't know how to escape from it. And so sometimes you're talking about penance, where there is some form of self-atonement.
Now, that could be a... As always, these could be mingled together. Right. There's more than one reason, but that could be a reason. Another reason that somebody gets to the point where they just aren't feeling anything, how does somebody get there?
The way that it's progression of sin. You could look at cutting like any other sin. When a person starts, he's dissatisfied with his relationship with his wife, and then he begins to look over the fence at another person. And then he begins to justify what he did. This is the dulling effect of the conscience. And then after a while, now he's in pornography or now he's in adultery. And so it's the progression of sin. You don't wake up in the morning, and nobody does that I'm going to cut myself this morning. But through a progression of hopelessness and horrific things that happen, and they try solutions and they don't find them, and then they get to the, oh, well, I just want to try this. And so it's always a progression, an unbiblical, godless progression that gets worse and worse. And we talked to earlier to where ultimately, okay, it's the progression to suicide. It could go that far.
All right. So this is just a step along the path.
Right.
Now, do we have any historical record of cutting, or is this a recent phenomenon because of social media?
No, it's been going on for a long time. I haven't studied cutting, and I couldn't give you historical facts, but it's not new. This is what I was saying earlier. It's been popularized.
Right.
Popularized because social media, we're much closer now, and of course, we have more data now than we've ever had before, and so it seems like it's pandemic, and I would say that it's more than it used to be, but this is not a new thing.
Okay, so social media has helped it, but it didn't create it.
No.
Mm-mm. You know, I can't help but think, though, on social media, and it's not just the YouTube machine, talking to friends, Instagramming, and, you know, I tried this, it felt good, it helped, temporarily, it does appear to help, and it just gets popularized, and more people are doing it. All right, does it help?
Social media?
No, cutting.
Cutting does not.
Well, no, I mean, people do it repeatedly. It must do something for them, at least temporarily.
Well, yeah, like drugs or alcohol or cutting, whatever cistern that we carve out as a solution that's not God's answer. Yeah, you can. What we're talking about, we're talking about relief versus change. And non-biblical means can give you relief, but it will never satisfy the discontentment of the heart, as Augustine said. And so, yes, when you say help, in the moment...
It gives some relief.
Momentary relief, but there's a difference between relief and repentance, which is a total life change.
Now, just so that nobody understands, Rick Thomas of rickthomas.net, when somebody walks into your biblical counseling office and they're doing this, perhaps you can see the scars, or it's July and they've got long sleeves on and you sense something is up. From the time that they walk in and they are currently actively cutting themselves to a time when their thinking is progressively changed by God, and they start to understand what true hope is. They find their satisfaction in the only one who satisfies. I know you don't have a chart for this, but does that take 2 or 3 days to fix the problem?
No.
What are we talking about here?
Well, there's three ways that you stop sinning.
Okay, hold on. The first thing is, I want to establish how long. Well, this is not a quick fix.
Yeah. Well, one, amputation in Matthew 5.
You're not going to give it. You're just going to bar it. You're just going to go ahead and do it anyway, aren't you?
In Matthew 5:30, and so I would want to talk to them about cutting that off. No pun intended at all. I don't mean that at all here, but we got to stop this. But that's a behavioral modification thing in Matthew 5:30. And so now there's a mortification issue, and that's Romans 8:13, to make dead the things, the body. And that's going to take a long time. And so we're talking months to walk. So you want to stop the crisis amputation. Now, if they are willing to do that, or they're not going to continue to cut themselves and be accountable to that, then you can move on to the process of dealing with the heart issues that are actually causing the cutting. And so stop it, and then let's start working on the problem. That would be ideal. But 6 months would be, you don't want to set artificial timelines because each person is different, but a solid 6 months of care. But then you also want them to be in a context where they can receive ongoing care for the rest of their lives, which would be the local church, receiving that care in the local church.
Yeah, but the point being, and again, an artificial timeline isn't helpful at all. Just wanted to establish this biblical counseling doesn't mean, oh, you come in,
no.
You give them the correct Bible verse, and then everything is fine. It is far more complex than that because we're dealing with histories, we're dealing with hurts and wounds, and we're dealing with the effect of the fall. We're dealing with sin. We're dealing with regeneration. So it's a long ride that until, we go on with somebody.
Yeah, until we meet Jesus. Yep.
Right. But even then, the sanctification process is ongoing, and it takes some time. All right. So the issue of cutting is a step in the progression on the road to suicide. So if I know somebody who's cutting, what do I do? Because it seems like that could be pretty dire at that moment.
Well, depending on the relationship that I have with the person, you want, and the age of the person, parents, and you know, what's, there's a lot of dynamics that's in play. So I want to get to know the person that I'm talking to, and then you begin to sculpt out a plan accordingly.
Right, but I want to make sure that they don't do anything to hurt themselves.
Right.
In a lasting sort of manner. Visit Rick Thomas of rickthomas.net. Much of this, it is unpacked even more. You've also got counselors at rickthomas.net that can help people one-on-one because it does, many times it requires, reading articles is nice, a human relationship is better, but even beyond that better, in your estimation, would be discipling in the context of a local church.
Yeah, and that is the progression for a lot of folks that come to us. They don't want to talk to someone face-to-face, and so what they do is they read our resources privately, and then as they receive, as God works in their lives, and then they come to us, and then we have a conversation. We could call that biblical counseling. And then from that point, we want to get them inside a local church where they can receive ongoing care. And so there is a progression there. But you could come to our website and more or less feed yourself and find some help, and then you could start talking to us, and that would be the next step, and I would recommend that.
RickThomas.net, and there shouldn't be any shame. We've all got issues, some of us more than others. Nevertheless, Rick Thomas of rickthomas.net. This is Wretched Radio. Couldn't say it any better than Michael Woolworth from Bible League International.
The world will drill wells and provide food and shelter. Those are very important causes.
Yes.
We smile favorably upon those. But getting God's word to believers half a world away, people you won't meet this side of eternity, that's on us as God's people.
Ain't nothing wrong with digging a well, but it is only the Christian church that can provide living water. Bible League International for decades, delivering Bibles to believers who have made a profession of faith, believers who have studied the basics of the Christian faith, are then given living water in the Word, a Bible. For just $5 per Bible, you could deliver a Bible to a believer overseas through Bible League International. Might it be possible you could send, say, 6 per month? Please call Bible League at 1-800-YES-WORD.
Without sounding too much like a mafia don, here's an offer you can't refuse. Wretched would like to give you up to 20 copies of our evangelistic booklet, What Time is Purple? And Other Intriguing Questions on the Road Trip to Truth. You heard me right. We want to give you these beautiful, thorough gospel booklets. But there are two strings attached. Well, really tiny strings, more like fishing line. Actually, thread would be better. You pay for shipping only, and you promise to give them away to the atheist or agnostic in your life who believes that evolution disproves the existence of God. Go to wretched.org/purple today and get your copies of What Time is Purple. It's also a great idea for the student in your life who's heading off to school or anyone who doubts that the Bible is true. Get your copies of What Time is Purple at wretched.org/purple. And thanks very much to the generosity of our gospel partners who make this giveaway possible.
If any of you have been looking for a reason to sponsor your very own Tomorrow Club in Eastern Europe, perhaps this story from Max, the national director in Ukraine, will inspire you to visit tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Arsène, just 5 years old, escaped his home and came to the camp. His grandmother would not let him. She was cursing all Christians. His grandmother sadly passes away. So he kept coming. Not only that, he brought his parents and they repented. So this family gives the house where the grandma used to live to the church. And that's where the Tomorrow Club meets.
And that story is not a one-off. Families getting saved constantly through the Tomorrow Clubs in Eastern Europe. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? 30 disciples, $30 per month. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the bridegroom. Christians are waiting for Christ's return, which the book of Revelation describes as the wedding of the Lamb. Christ will come to usher his bride, his church, into eternity with him. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Got a little issue with anger? This is Wretched Radio. Joining us in studio, Rick Thomas of rickthomas.net. I'm just going to guess, anger is one of the big subjects that people visit your website for most regularly. Am I correct?
No, we don't.
Oh, come on!
We don't ever do.
Don't make me come over there, pally boy!
I'm getting impatient with you.
When I get angry with somebody, in essence, what am I doing in my heart?
The heart of anger is self-righteousness, and so you can't get angry with anyone without elevating yourself above them to look down on them. It's the Pharisee in the temple looking down on this person here, and so you can't be angry without being self-righteous, and there's no grace for the angry person.
You know, and see, here's where you're wrong. You don't understand the people that I live with. They deserve it.
Maybe.
Well, they might be doing things to get up your nose, but that does not excuse self-righteousness and anger, does it?
That is correct. I like the way you answered your own question. Did you like the way I turned that back on you?
Well, that's what you do in biblical counseling. You basically want to
you gave me the answer that I was looking for.
Okay.
So you asked the question and you answered the question.
All right. So
you answered it correctly, by the way.
Did I? What was my answer? I can't even remember the question.
I don't remember.
See, here we are. This is why you take notes in biblical counseling. Am I correct? Anger is a big issue for people.
Anger is one of the biggest problems in our lives. But when you use the word anger, what we have to do is we have to... There's many manifestations of anger.
Uh-huh.
And if you say, you know, I'm angry, people say, well, no, I'm not angry. Well, then a manifestation of anger is impatience. Or my daughter was walking across the room many years ago, and she huffed under her breath toward her mother. And I asked her, why did you murder your mother? James says in James 4:1, you don't get what you want, so you murder. But huffing under the breast sounds a whole lot better than what James called anger, which is murder. And so people like to round the corners off their anger, and they recategorize it. You know, I'm just disappointed. I'm impatient. I'm frustrated. Mm-hmm. I'm rolling the eyes. I'm huffing under the breath. But when you bring all of that under the umbrella of anger, then it is a huge problem. My number one manifestation of anger is impatience. I struggle with impatience. And so that's my struggle with anger. And it's important when you talk about anger that people identify how they get angry. And so these manifestations are important. Mine is impatience.
So explain to me a time when you manifested impatience. What I'm doing to you? Look what I'm doing. I'm asking you the questions now, aren't I?
You're doing well.
Thank you.
You'll get a certificate.
Are you getting impatient yet?
I can be if you keep this up.
Well, okay, let me just see if I'm tracking with you. impatience, because you said it's connected to self-righteousness, it's connected to pride, is my thinking that I think that you should be doing it as well as I would do it. Let's make it snappy here. Is that what's going on?
That's one of the ways, yes. You should do it, especially the things that we do well. We can map our gifts and strengths over other people and have an expectation that they do it the same way. And then we become impatient with them, and now it's a self-righteous attitude. I am better than you. Self-righteousness is a better than, greater than attitude is what we're talking about. And so my impatience now, I'm looking down on you because you can't do it as well as I do or as fast as I want you to do it.
And so that is ultimately a sin of self-righteousness that's going on. So if I am exhibiting any of those synonyms, I'm just a little frustrated. Well, I just get a little anxious for how they do. Or it's just explosive anger because the kids just don't ever clean up the room the way that I, whatever it happens to be. At it, there's varying shades of it. You would agree these right. are shades.
Right.
But at the core is pride and self-righteousness. How do I get down to that core so I can deal with my anger problem?
Well, you have this conversation with someone, and they have got to embrace this. They have to understand what they are doing. And so what I try to do, one, unpack the manifestation of anger, because that's important. Most people just have tight definitions of anger, usually along the lines of volatile anger, like what you were saying, rage or whatever. And so then we identify what they're doing. If they buy into that, let's say impatience, like with me, or frustration, then we're just having a discipleship conversation. Like, do you want help? Now, if they won't help, well, then we can start talking about it. A fool doesn't want help. Some people don't want help. And if they don't want it, then you can't really do much with them anyway. But if they truly want to change, then it's really simple to walk through what is really going on. And when you begin to identify that it's self-righteousness, I said earlier, there's no grace for this, because the righteous person, they have their righteousness, and so they don't need God's righteousness. And so they have to understand that their anger ultimately is a sin against God. I am doing it my way. I am using my righteousness rather than accepting yours. And so they have to humble themselves and realize that they are no better than that person that they have elevated themselves above. Now, once they come down and realize that it's really just two beggars that are arguing over pennies, and then when they see, then God gives grace for that person. And that's what he said in James 4:6. He's opposed to the proud, but he gives favor or grace to the humble. Now, once they see that and then they lower themselves, well, the anger begins to go away.
Rick Thomas of rickthomas.net. The individual who is angry, whether it's explosive or a little bit more subtle. And by the way, you taught me this too. Do you know how I can have anger, be angry at somebody?
I'm not sure. I mean, you're fallen. It's easy.
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking the silent treatment?
Yes, sir, we are. Yeah. Yeah. Anger can be silent, can it?
Yeah, well, the two extremes of anger, on the farthest extreme this way, is murder. I will kill you. And murder says, I don't like you, and so I'm going to make you disappear. And then if you go all the way to the subtle side of anger, you take it as far as you can. You have another form of murder, which I call silent treatment. Silent treatment says a similar thing. I don't like you, and so I'm going to pretend that you don't exist. We are good Christian people, and so we would never physically murder anyone. But we will treat people like they don't exist. And that's why it's, now, in between those two extremes are all these other things that we're talking about. Road rage, flipping somebody off, manipulation, impatience, frustration. And so it's important that they see that. And then James, and that's why I said to my daughter, why did you murder my mother or your mother? Because I wanted her to see, because here's what's going to happen. Rolling your eyes as a four-year-old kid is going to turn into something really bad when she's 35 and married to a man who's a knucklehead, which is the only kind of man that you could ever marry. And what's going to happen if she is used to not getting her way and responding in anger, rolling the eyes as a four-year-old, well, it will move toward volatile anger when she's 35. And so I know this, and that's why I wanted her to, we're going to put a pin in this. This is murder. James called it murder. Now, once you call it what James called it, then your eyes get big, hopefully, and you see how horrific it is, and you see how you have shaded it to such a place that it doesn't feel bad. But when you see it for what it really is, I'm a self-righteous person looking on another person, looking down on another person, and I really need God's mercy on me right now because I am a horrific individual.
And it makes a hash of the gospel. I'm thinking about the scene in the temple. I deserve forgiveness,
right,
but this person doesn't. So God should have patience with me, but I'm not going to have it with somebody else.
Yeah, and that's the great verse, 18:35, Matthew, and that's what he said. Can you not have mercy as I have had shown mercy on you? And that's a powerful verse, and that should dissipate. That should remove our anger if we have that humble attitude, not that elevated attitude.
Which this was an article, I don't know if you remember this, you wrote this years ago. It so stopped me in my tracks, it does to this day. When somebody sins against me, let's say it's my spouse, she genuinely sins against me, but I retaliate. In essence, do you recall what you said in that article? What am I doing to my spouse?
You're making her pay for her sin.
And who paid for my spouse's sin?
Well, you want to lead her to, if she legitimately sinned against you, you want to lead her to Christ and let Christ pay for her sin. But unfortunately, what we try to do when we don't get what we want, as you're describing here, is we go ahead and punish this person here. And so we make them pay for their sin. That's not redemptive. Obviously, it's not discipling, caring for your spouse. You want to lead the angry person to Christ rather than compounding the problem. So now we have two angry people. The irony here is that they're committing this very similar sins.
And isn't that ironic? To learn more about your anger problem, and we all have it to varying degrees, I can't commend rickthomas.net. to you enough. It will help you unpack the self-righteousness in your heart. Not easy sledding, but this is what the Christian faith is all about, seeing ourselves in truth and then going to the one who is truth, who can reprogram our brains with his biblical software. See what I did? I brought this whole thing right back around there, which is what biblical counseling, thank you, is all about. Rick Thomas of rickthomas.net. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.